back to Hitch Route. Honestly, this was a bit of a calm week, in my humble opinion. There were a few blowouts, there were a few games that were down to the wire, but maybe I'm just gone through the motions at this point, but I'm a little tired of the NFL almost at this point. How do you feel about it, Rob?
That's an interesting take. Definitely, I would say one of the calmer weeks for sure. Maybe the calmest one so far. Feels like we're starting to get to know these teams and like what they are and what their weaknesses and their strengths are. Which I suppose, you know, the first 4 weeks of every NFL season is kind of a circus. You know, like there's so much we don't know. I don't know how anyone professionally bets the first 4 weeks. I really don't know how they like survive, how they feed their families, but apparently they do because they do it every year. It feels like we're starting to normalize again, which is nice. It's nice that we're like, it's very nice from a Survivor League standpoint. I can tell you that, not having to like worry about whether the Lions or the Texans will win in a given week. I feel like these standings are starting to round into form a bit. So.
Yeah. I think that's probably what it is now that we have a firm grip of what these teams are. But I guess for me, I'm just tired of it. I like football, and you know, maybe it's easier for me to get tired of it because, let's face it, as much as I love my Bears, this isn't going to be their year. So for me, it's just going to be a drag watching the developments of the season. But I don't know. I guess I don't love any of the top teams, and I'm just feeling a bit of malaise at this point.
Yeah. It does feel like there's no one team that's exactly running away with it at this moment. And to some extent, you know, that's what you get in a salary cap league that is so often plagued by injuries, particularly to the top teams who tend to be the top teams because they're a bit more top heavy. They have more star players. And so when those star players get hurt, suddenly there's not much depth there. So it's, you know, it's interesting. It's very interesting, but I've got a good feeling that there's plenty of excitement left to come this season. And, you know, I've just got a feeling that things are going to start to heat up here. Especially as a couple of teams go on a run. And, you know, now that all these teams, I think, kind of know who they are and they're starting to discover what their identities are, I think we could potentially get some perhaps less crazy, exciting games, but perhaps some more interesting and compelling ones.
For sure, for sure. Well, how about we just dive straight into the Week 5 reactions with perhaps the most exhilarating football game to ever appear before the screen.
Kill me. Kill me right now, please.
I wish I could.
Yes, I know you do.
Colts at Broncos. I mean, what else is there to really say except, you know, not a single touchdown was scored in this game. And every team looked bad for the most part. I'll give props to Alec Pierce. You know, he looked good out of the Colts, but that's really all I can say as a positive takeaway from that viewing experience.
Yeah, positive takeaway and that experience do not go together in the same sentence. Russell Wilson, news came out he had a torn lat, which was interfering with his deep ball throwing. All I have to say is he'd better hope that's the problem. He had better hope that's the problem, because I am not liking what I'm seeing from a man who so recently was one of the best deep ball throwers in the NFL. He's got to figure it out.
your prediction strike shares really hope that's the case as well.
They really, really hope that's the case. And not just because I may or may not have decided to buy more after that game, because I'm a psychopath like that.
Buying the dip thrice.
Yes.
The legend.
Yes. Buying the dip only to buy a lower dip 5 days later. It really is the move, kids. Steelers at Bills.
What a competitive game this was.
So we thought the Steelers were going to be not good. Did we think they were going to be this not good? I can't say that I thought that. I mean,
I had a feeling they'd be this not good against the Bills, for the record.
Perhaps. I did see the line set at minus 14 by Vegas, and I thought that was a little rich. Nah, it wasn't rich. In fact, if anything, it was conservative.
Yeah, it wasn't even half the final line.
Yeah.
Which was a lot.
Yeah, the line literally could have been minus 25, and you still would have comfortably taken home the bacon if you had taken the Bills here. Steelers are at a crossroads, and they've got a lot of soul searching to do on offense, and they better hope this is the aberration going forward.
And they better hope Kenny Pickett's the guy. I mean, obviously this was a bad game, but, you know, he looked poised for a young player, which is a fun takeaway. And also, Gabe Davis had the most Gabe Davis game of all time. So that's something.
Yeah. These are the kinds of games where Gabe Davis thrives. I think we can all agree.
Moving on to Texans at Jaguars.
The juiciest, a
divisional dumpster fire.
The juiciest division rivalry in all of football.
The Texans swept the Jaguars last year, and the Jaguars, despite being a better team than they were, lost to the Texans. You know, Trevor Lawrence just wasn't up to snuff this game. I thought he'd bounce back after having four forced fumbles against the Eagles, but this team was quiet and the Texans were desperate. So there you go.
I actually saw a study the other day that said there are more truck driving accidents right around the time that the Texans and Jags kick off, presumably from truck drivers who are so anxious to pull over so that they can watch this game, than at any other window throughout the entire 2021 NFL season. So take that for what it's worth. This is the juiciest rivalry in football. No, it's not. Jags were a sexy survivor pick this week, much to the chagrin of many people who play Survivor.
Indeed.
Really poor showing by the Jags, but such as it goes with the AFC South and most of their intra-division matchups, it's such a crapshoot, man. It's such a crapshoot with this division. And for that reason, I stay away from it entirely.
Fair enough.
Lions at Patriots. You know, we thought the kneecap soup would not go cold again this season, but I just want to say, did anyone remember to heat the kneecap soup up in the first place?
I'm pretty certain it's spoiled. It's currently foaming over the sides of the pot as we speak.
Whatever the case may be, kids, you should not, and I repeat, you should not drink this kneecap soup.
Number one offense in the NFL got shut out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, isn't that crazy, honestly, though? Like we all respect Bill Belichick and just what he means to this game and just the unbelievable defensive mastermind that he is. But that's impressive, man. I mean, this is an offense that was just firing on all cylinders, you know, through the first 4 weeks of the season, and he shut them down. I mean, you've got to give the man his props. That was a masterclass exhibition in coaching.
I will say technically, this game didn't have to be a shutout because the Lions made it to the red zone a few times. However, because they were down so deep, they were only playing for touchdowns, and that's why they failed to convert. They very easily could have gotten some field goals, but obviously, this was a tremendous showing by the Patriots all around. And Bailey Zappe with his first career win.
Yeah. 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 No, I mean, you know, he looked good. You know, he looked good. And the Patriots have to be happy with where he's at this point in his development. Obviously, Mac Jones is the guy. But you know, they have to be pleased with what they saw from Bailey Zappe. So,
moving on to Seahawks at Saints. This is one of the most boring, fun games of this game. It felt weird to watch. It felt slow. It felt dysfunctional. But the end score was 39-32. And Taysom Hill had 4 touchdowns. 3 on the ground, 1 as a passing touchdown through the air. I'm pretty sure fantasy managers across the country are adding him like their life depends on it.
Wonder if any of those contract incentives kicked in on the Superdome on that Sunday.
It's just strange because he does the same thing every time, and he almost never throws the ball. So whenever it's within 10 yards from the goal line, why is any team played as anything other than a designed run? I still don't get it.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's not hard, folks. It's really not that hard. If Taysom Hill is out there, he's going right up the gut. It's really not that difficult. I mean, hey, you know, he's a weapon. I mean, he is, I'll give him credit, man. He is a weapon. And he's a weapon that the Saints know how to use. And Lord knows they needed him on Sunday because I don't know what is in the water at the Seahawks facility. I don't know where Geno is ordering Uber Eats every night. But my goodness, what is going on with this man? I mean, like, did I miss something? Like were there signs of this Genozance, which was coming in 2022, like should I have paid more attention to like the Farmer's Almanac or like the Football Almanac or something? Because like this man is just, I mean, I can't even put it into words what I'm seeing from Geno Smith so far this season. I really can't.
It's truly been phenomenal, and somehow he has been the better quarterback consistently, week after week, than Russell Wilson, the guy that the Seahawks traded away for 2 first-round picks and several players.
I mean, honestly, like, it's almost as if the football gods are just trying to clown Russ for his corniness. Like it feels like they are just really overstepping their bounds in order to try and prove a point to us. I'm sorry, but, you know, their trajectories have to reverse from here. Russ has to trend upward from here, and Geno has to trend downward from here. There's no way that either of their 2 seasons, respectively, are going to continue trending in their current trajectories. It's just not possible. It's just not possible.
Keep putting money on it, Rob, and see how it works out for you.
I might just have to do that, which means I'm probably going to be buying plenty more dips in my future. So, Dolphins at Jets. Well, that was a really exciting fourth quarter if you were a Jets fan.
I suppose it was. It was a very not exciting game at all for Miami. Losing Teddy Bridgewater on the first snap of the offense.
Yeah. Yeah, just a really tough break for Miami. I mean, you know, I'm sure we all have all kinds of thoughts about Miami's ownership and the overall, you know, management of the franchise. But, I mean, losing both of your, you know, quarterbacks within a 3-week stretch, that's tough. I mean, that's almost impossible to overcome from a football perspective. And, you know, I kind of feel like their season is on the rocks until they can get either one of those guys back. And, yeah, I mean, let's just say it could really come back to help them that they were able to come back in that game against the Ravens during week two, and literally scored 28 points in the fourth quarter in order to just eke out the win. That we may be looking back on their season, and that was the difference between them getting into the playoffs and potentially missing the playoffs. Because, I mean, I do think they're a playoff caliber team if one of their quarterbacks is out there, Teddy or Tua. Obviously, mostly Tua, but I think Teddy could do it also. But, man, if they get in now, they're probably going to get in by a game and not much more. You know, assuming both Tua and or Teddy continue to miss significant time. So
I think Teddy's might just be one game. We don't know. But, yeah. And on the other side of the story, the Jets looked good. The Jets scored 40 points in a football game. I didn't think that was mathematically possible, but here we are.
Yeah, definitely not mathematically possible if you study the last 10 to 12 seasons. But perhaps if you go back a bit further than that, hey man, you know, the Jets are good. They've got dudes. I mean, they've got dudes, and the dudes are starting to really come together. And you know, you've got to be happy for Robert Sala. I mean, he was taking all kinds of heat earlier this year, telling people that, you know, he was gonna write all of their words down and not write back or whatever he said. And he's not writing back. I mean, he is not writing back. That's for sure. Because he doesn't have to.
No, he doesn't. Good for the Jets. Moving on, though. Falcons at Bucks. This was a game that wasn't much of a game until the end. Bucks were up 21-0, and then the Falcons do what the Falcons seem to be doing at this point and almost erase massive leads. And they very well might have, if not for one of the worst roughing the passer calls in NFL history.
Yeah. Yeah, that was not good, man. You know, that was not good. And it really calls into question just, do we need to start reviewing these things? I mean, do we just need to start reviewing every personal foul call? Because especially, again, you know, it's 15 yards and the play is negated. And more often than not, it's a successful play. You know, that's why, like, it warranted, or I shouldn't say warranted. The warranted is a very strong word. That's why it gave the refs some cause to call the foul, right? I mean, you know, it's getting to the point now where these flags are deciding games. And like, what's really bad is when they're deciding games for no good reason, because they're wrong. And this one was just wrong. I'm sorry, it was wrong. You know, it is possible to overcorrect. We all want to protect the quarterbacks because the game is so much better when they're healthy, but it is possible to overcorrect. You have to let the defense, you know, sack people or at least try to tackle them. And we are, you know, we're treading a fine line here, and I think we're starting to overstep our bounds a little bit too much.
You see the tweet that Field Yates put out? It was something to the effect of, new NFL rule has been established stating that anytime a defensive player sacks the quarterback, it's automatic first down for the offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that pretty much sums it all up, as many Fields Yates tweets do. I mean, it's just hard to watch, man. And like, it's even harder to watch when it's your team that gets hosed for it, you know, because like, it feels like you're just laughing in the face of defenders who already have a hard enough job, and now you're going to make it impossible? Come on, guys. Come on.
Yeah. Definitely tough sledding from an officiating standpoint.
Yeah. Moving on to Titans at Commanders. Commanders. Yeah. Kind of a this is a very, very Carson Wentz kind of finish.
How so?
Well, like, I mean, Washington's driving with a chance to effectively, you know, win the game. Don't know if they needed a touchdown. I don't believe they needed a touchdown. I believe a field goal would have done the trick, but I could be wrong about that. Maybe you can check the final score for me in the background. They lost by four. What?
They lost by four.
Lost by four. Okay, so they did need a so they did need a touchdown. That makes sense. But you know, they're driving, they're moving down the field, they get into the red zone, and Wentz is just not at all caring for the football. I mean, he is just chucking it up there, and he's got Titans players coming down with it, but just getting a foot out of bounds so the interception doesn't count. Throwing another ball right in a sea of traffic. Should have been intercepted, but the guy couldn't hold on to it. His receiver never had a chance. And then finally, Carson Wentz gets his wish. Finally, he gets his wish, and he throws arguably the most unwatchable ball of all three, and it inevitably bounces up in the air and comes down into a Titan defender's hand. And that's how the game ended. That's how Washington fans got to spend their 3:59 p.m. this past Sunday, watching Carson Wentz literally try to throw the ball to the other team on three consecutive plays and finally get his wish on the third. I mean, what are we doing, man? Just what are you doing? What are you doing? You did not have to make the throws that you did in order to close out that game, but you did, and you lost. And now you're 1-4, and it's all because of you and your abhorrent judgment in the red zone.
Ron Rivera put it best when he said, well, he was asked in an interview, what separates your team from the other NFC East teams, which for the record somehow are all at least 4-1 or 5-0 if you're the Eagles? And his one word answer was quarterback.
I must have missed that. Did he actually say that?
Yes.
That's hilarious, dude. That's actually hilarious.
Not for Carson Wentz.
That's actually hilarious. Oh my goodness, man. I just can't, man. I really can't with that team.
Moving on. 49ers at Panthers. I can't even begin to offer a take other than, you know, 49ers are better. At least Matt Rhule is gone and Baker is in a walking boot. So this offense will have to look very fundamentally different moving forward.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed our little soliloquy on the Panthers in the Discord a couple of days ago. That was quite a lively discussion we had amongst Frumpkin, myself, and some of our fellow football aficionados. Perhaps the deepest discussion that any such group of football aficionados has had on the Carolina Panthers since 2015.
It's because there's a lot of Panthers fans in our group since we all went to school in North Carolina.
Might have something to do with that.
Correlation, not causation.
Indeed. Let's not establish a causation where there isn't one.
Speaking of correlation, though, Cooper Rush, greatest quarterback of all time. Or is that causation? What do you think?
The only causation here that I can think of is no Andrew Whitworth, no Rams. I mean, the Rams are alarmingly average. I kind of dismissed the week one game as like they were kind of feeling themselves coming off the Super Bowl. Bills were a really tough matchup because of their defensive front. And I suppose the Cowboys are to an extent, you know, with Micah Parsons out there and all of their guys. But at the same time, like, we're starting to see a pattern here. They cannot hold up against a capable defensive front. I mean, they are going to get worked against every above average defensive front they face this year. And they might be able to hang with the ones that aren't as good. Might. I mean, who knew, man? Who knew that an old left tackle who was, you know, demonstrably on the way out could have meant so much to this team? I mean, he's easily the biggest component of that Super Bowl team that nobody talked about all last year. Because we're seeing what it looks like when he's not out there. And they're not a good team. They're just not.
I guess, lo and behold, the offensive line matters when we're playing football.
It's just, as someone who likes the Rams, wants to see the Rams succeed, as someone who, you know, considers the Rams, you know, among their favorite teams that they're not technically an official fan of, I'm just so disappointed, man. I'm so disappointed in this year's Rams. I'm disappointed in Matt Stafford. I'm disappointed in their recent misses in the draft. Tutu Atwell, the receiver they drafted to be their deep threat, he can't play. The Allen Robinson acquisition has been a disaster. He literally cannot separate. And you are left with an offense that runs through turnover machine Matt Stafford, the unbelievably talented yet still a singular man Cooper Kupp, and tight end Tyler Higbee. And that's what you get. You get a 22-10 loss to the backup quarterback-led Dallas Cowboys. So Rams are in trouble, man. Rams are in serious trouble. I'm just going to say it now. I'm not going to call them missing the playoffs just yet because they could always turn things around. But for the foreseeable future, man, they're a massive question mark to me.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Those were our shallow dives, if you will, for the slate. But let's go into our marquee matchups. Mm. Our first one was Giants at Packers. A London game that was actually interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. What a great one, man. And like, what a great game for the international stage. This game had everything. I mean, it had a huge lead by the Green Bay Packers, who I'm sure if you live in London and you follow the NFL at all, you know, I'm sure, you know, you probably know that the Packers are one of the more storied franchises in football. And, you know, I'm sure it got the crowd going to see them get up by, you know, so many points fairly early on in the game. But then on the other side, you've got the New York Giants, who I would argue are also a pretty big football brand, perhaps not as big as the Packers, but they're a New York team. So they obviously have a massive following themselves. And it was almost like we got to see one big brand take all of the thunder early and then the other big brand steal all the thunder away from them over the remaining course of the game. So like in that regard, just a great, great game for the international stage in general. But also, man, like how about these Giants? I mean, clearly one of the best adjusting teams in the NFL. I think they have one of the best second half point differentials of anyone in the league. So they're clearly making great adjustments at half. They're clever. They're creative. Brian Daboll is getting the absolute most out of Daniel Jones, and he's getting better every single week. Saquon is just an unbelievable phenom, and they're fun, man. They're fun to watch. This is easily the most fun to watch Giants team I can remember. So good for them. That's really all I have to say. Just an unbelievable win for them. Perhaps one of their best wins in the last 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, I think that goes almost without saying. They certainly are a second-half team. Over the first 5 games of the season, remember, they are 4-1, so they are winning football games 80% of the time. They only have a single first-half touchdown. Yeah. This is very much a second-half team.
Very,
That's all that matters. You just have to win games.
Yeah.
In this second half in particular, they shut out the Packers besides a safety that they intentionally gave them.
Yeah. Frumpkin, do we think that being a second-half team in today's NFL may actually be more advantageous than being a first-half team?
At the end of the day, you would like to be a both-halves team. You would like to be a Buffalo Bills, if you will, and even they had a very much second half only game when they faced your team.
But yeah.
Yeah, the second half is clearly the more important one because defenses just get tired and offenses take over in the second half of these games.
Yeah. 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 And like, you know, the teams that have struggled in the second half so far this year, the Ravens definitely among them, they dropped two games in the first 4 weeks and they trailed by a total of 14 seconds in those two games. So
that's a stat right there.
Yeah. And it just makes me wonder, is it really all that advantageous to build up a massive first half lead? Because I suppose most of the time you'll keep it, but clearly not all the time. And I'd almost rather be the one coming from behind than the one trying to hang on for dear life late.
See, this is what's great about the Chicago Bears. We only have any signs of life in the second half of a football game. Actually, oh, man. Not true. We'll get into it, but we had a beautiful play at the very end of the second quarter.
So very end. Very end.
Very, like, as almost as late as possible.
It was a beautiful, beautiful play.
Nevertheless, I'm just happy that Cheesehead stunk it up, you know? I'm always happy to see that. And on a national stage, too. International, rather. Lovely. Just lovely. But I'm just surprised the Packers didn't run more, considering they were up so much. They want to pass. Aaron Rodgers wants to pass. And his ego is getting in the way of this team. And I don't think they coach well, because they should have just been designing runs, because they have Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, and the Giants are a pretty bad defense against the run.
Perhaps this is a bit of a hot take, but I'm not so sure Matt LaFleur is a great coach.
You think that having Aaron Rodgers this entire time has covered up for some of his mistakes and his lack of quality, if you will?
That may or may not be exactly what I think. Perhaps time will tell. Moving on to the Chargers at the Browns. Oh, Brandon Staley.
Yes, oh, Brandon Staley. But at the end, his Madden-like decision-makings led him to barely win a football game. So how mad can you be at him?
I mean, before you can say, oh, Brandon Staley, you have to say, oh, Cade York. Because, I mean, ultimately, Cade York, let's be honest, saved Brandon Staley from being absolutely eviscerated on Monday. How can you make that play call? I'm sorry, but for those who didn't watch the game, it was actually a pretty competitive and interesting game throughout. The Browns had some really nice drives behind Jacoby Brissett. I've got to give the man his props. He played very well, especially in the first half. Or at least he played well enough for some drives in order to make them interesting. Nick Chubb is an absolute freak of nature, but the Chargers are the Chargers, and the Chargers have Justin Herbert. So they were never out of the game. They were consistently in it. And then Brandon Staley decides with 4th and 1, it might have been 4th and 1.5, so more like 4th and 2, from like midfield in the waning moments of the game, down, mark you. Or rather, no, I'm sorry. He was up, but he was only up by about 2 points, I think. In fact, he was up 30-28, the final score. He elects to go for it on 4th down, knowing full well that if he does not convert, he has to give the ball back to the Browns, and they literally need a 1.5 to try a reasonable field goal. Like, what are we doing? I mean, like, it's Jacoby Brissett you're playing. I could understand if you were playing Patrick Mahomes, or if you were playing Josh Allen, or if you were playing Lamar Jackson. But you're playing Jacoby Brissett. What's he going to do? Drive the ball the length of the field in, like, under a minute and get his team into field goal range? He can certainly move them 15 yards. But can he move them 75? Can he move them 65? I don't think he can. I don't think he can. Not with that little time left and not enough timeouts to do it. Just, what are we doing? I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but what are we doing? What are we doing?
If Cade York hit just one of those field goals, I would have won my fantasy week. He missed both of them. Both of them.
Hmm. Such it be in the wonderful world of fantasy, my guy.
Such it be, uh-huh. Nevertheless, this Browns team, I mean, also, Brandon Staley made a very similar decision like that. We all know he likes to go for it, but sometimes you just have to take the points. It was fourth and two, and they were down 7-0, and they were like the 30-something yard line. Just take the field goal. Just get some points.
We debate these fourth down decisions when they go wrong every single week. This one is not defendable. All of the other ones are defendable. And for the record, I don't mean all of the other Brandon Staley decisions. I mean all of the other decisions that coaches have made over the last couple of weeks, you know, to start this season, which really could have
Nathaniel Hackett one, mind you.
Yes, yes. It's just this one is not defendable because if you don't convert, which you didn't, you literally gave the Browns a 15-yard red carpet to getting into field goal range. And, like, just, I can't even talk about it. I can't even talk about it because I was so high on the Chargers this year, and I think they're being run into the ground by this clown. I think they're being run into the ground by his clownhood.
And I will just say, as a final note on the Chargers, because I have nothing to add about the Browns, besides, you know, Chubb is awesome. Best, only running back so far to have more than 100 scrimmage yards in every single game this season.
But he'll go, but he'll go 15th overall in next year's fantasy drafts. He'll go 15th overall. Mark you.
Overall in my other league.
He was what?
He went 22nd overall in my other league. And I have a friend who at the 28th overall spot chose not to draft him, even though I told him to draft him. You know, like, I told him it was Chubb season. And he didn't draft him at 28th overall because he thought he'd be able to get him at, like, 32nd.
Well, it's their loss and it's our gain. For those who do not know, Frumpkin and I, we co-manage a fantasy team. We have the last 2 years, and we are both very, very high on one Nick Chubb every time we hit the war room, and it consistently amazes us just how late he goes in these drafts because he's such a steal, man. He's such a steal every single time.
Yeah. Nevertheless, Chargers, I just think that they'll be better. They haven't had Keenan Allen for four weeks.
Yeah.
Keenan Allen is the primary cog in that offense.
He is.
Williams has looked good, at least from a fantasy perspective, but he cannot be the alpha wide receiver in offense. Moving on. My team almost won a football game. That's right. We almost won a football game, Rob.
It's true. You almost won a football game, Frumpkin.
I'm still almost proud of us.
I was so almost proud of you, and I was certainly not almost, as in I was unabashedly proud of one Justin Fields in this game. Oh. That man balled out on Sunday.
He played a game of football, which is something I didn't possibly have the bravery to say a few weeks ago. But yeah, Justin, JF1, I never bailed from him, certainly. But obviously you have to raise concerns when he started off as poorly as he did. But he is out here proving the doubters wrong. I thought he'd have a good game. I actually predicted that the Bears would win this game. And we almost did. If it wasn't for Amir Smith-Marset fumbling it absurdly with 1 minute left, we very well could have had a game-winning drive from Justin. He hasn't had the chance to do that yet because the Bears have been down a lot, to be frank. The closest we had was against that Steelers game last year when we got a game-winning drive, but then the Steelers got bailed out by fouls so that they had a ridiculous attempt to get that they even had the chance to hit a field goal to make us lose on Monday Night Football. But that's neither here nor there. The Bears definitely looked a lot like the team America thought they would look like, a team without receivers and a team without an offensive line. But at the very least, Justin Fields was balling despite what was working with.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that's the biggest takeaway, is that both quarterbacks at times looked sensational, and both of them were, I would argue, both of them did enough for their respective teams to win. But Fields was just so clearly doing it with so much less. I mean, Cousins just, I give him credit. He owns that 1 o'clock window. He is so sharp. U.S. Bank Stadium, the sun is shining into the stadium. He is sharp, man. He finds his guys. He's pinpoint accurate. And Minnesota has a fantastic offense. They're much cleverer with Kevin O'Connell. They're fun to watch. They've got weapons everywhere. Guys making plays left and right. It's practically, honestly, I don't think it's that much of a stretch to say the Vikings are bordering on an all-star team offensively. Kirk Cousins is really, honestly, perhaps the weakest link among those pieces. But when he's on, man, I'm not sure he's not one of the best in the business when he's on.
QB, am I right?
Yes, indeed. Indeed you are. But on the other side, like, you know, Fields is out here literally coming back from being down, what was it? Like 21-3 or something like that?
21-3.
And he's just making plays. He's making more plays than his receivers are making for him. Just unbelievably poor timed drops on third down, which just killed otherwise promising drives. The man is just making it up as he goes along, but like in a good way. You know, he's making stuff happen when he has not nearly enough to make stuff happen with.
I sent you a tweet earlier today. Basically, the entire left side of the offensive line collapsed, and there were free rushers coming at Fields. And he somehow, on this fourth down play at the end of the game, while we're trying to get that touchdown, is able to make his way on fourth and four and get the first down.
Amazing. You know,
he is doing so much with so little right now.
Simply amazing, man. Simply amazing. I mean, I've just got to tip my cap to him. He's on the way. He's on the way to developing into what I think could be something really special. And I don't think it's that much of a stretch to say we could begin to see real glimpses of that as soon as midseason and unquestionably later in the year, regardless of how well the team does record-wise.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Vikings are 4-1, and they at least now have a one-game lead once again for the NFC North seed. But, hey, the Bears almost won a football game. That's all that matters.
Eagles at Cardinals, our fourth Super 6 game of the week.
Also known as the Bird Game. No offense to your Ravens, it's just that the Bengals are in fact not birds.
They are in fact not birds, and unfortunately, there are too many bird teams to go around. You know, we've got Falcons, we've got Ravens, we've got Eagles, we've got Cardinals. There's just so, you know, too many birds, not enough not enough sidelines to go around for all of them. So, yeah, the Eagles hang on. You know, the Eagles hang on, they hang on for dear life, and they win. And that's enough. But once again, man, another Kyler Murray game where he's clawing his way back into it in the second half because he didn't do enough in the first half. because he doesn't watch film.
Wow. Is that your actual take, that that's why he has to claw back?
I mean, it's not even a take per se, as it's just the reality of the Arizona Cardinals. They're an awful first quarter team. I mean, I don't think they have a first quarter touchdown all year long. They might have broken that streak on Sunday. I forget. But going into Sunday's game, they had not – I don't think they had even scored.
They definitely did not score in the first quarter.
I don't think they have scored in the first quarter so far this year.
That's not good.
No. No, it's not. And it's especially not good given all of the hullabaloo we heard about his film study habits during the offseason leading up to the contract clause. And like, we're kind of starting to see some evidence of that play out. I mean, am I wrong?
I mean, I just don't, again, maybe it's a correlation, not a causation thing. No matter what, I think that it's obviously very clear that this team has problems at the start of games. And despite that, Kyler still, you know, he's getting paid what he's getting paid because he has that magic. He has that ability to learn and adjust on the fly. And they almost, maybe not won, but they were a missed field goal away from sending this to overtime. And the Eagles just scraped by.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I just watch Kyler out here making magic happen late in games because he can, and he's very instinctual and supremely talented, you know, a thrower and an athlete. But like, traditionally, you know, the first quarter to a quarter and a half is regarded as the scripted portion of games. And I just tend to think that if you're not good during the scripted portion of games, it means you're not well prepared for the game. And the way you prepare for the game is you watch film. Mm. So, I don't know, man.
You didn't have removed the independent study clause, is what you're saying.
I'm saying that, you know, it's something.
It is something, all right. Speaking of something, the Philadelphia Eagles are 5-0. Ain't that something, Rob?
Ain't that something, man. What can you say? I'm pretty sure they're the only team this year that has never trailed in the second half. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that's off the top of my head, that checks out. They've trailed at the starts of games, but they've always solidified by the end of first halves at the worst.
Yeah, yeah. And like, you know, that's in some ways, I don't know if that's necessarily the best recipe for getting better as a football team. I think, you know, having the heat put on you a little bit and having some moments where you do have to come back, especially late in games, is, you know, valuable. But at the same time, like, it's also a testament to just how good you are and how good you are at, like, putting teams away. And there have been a handful of teams over the years. I mean, the 2019 Ravens among them, the 2015 Panthers come to mind, that just completely bury teams early. Now, granted, they didn't bury Arizona on Sunday, but they've buried plenty of teams so far this year. And because they bury teams so early, it's almost like the second half is just less relevant because it's literally just the other team trying to claw their way back. And if Philly has any success whatsoever in the second half, it literally just puts the game out of reach for the opponent. So, I mean, good for them, man. You know, they were a playoff team last year, but they are, shall we say, they are finding their wings this year.
Hmm. Deep. Speaking of another team that found its wings, your Ravens, against your divisional rivals, Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, man. I actually had the fun fortune of getting to attend this game with my dad. And gonna be honest, not the game we expected to see. Not the game I think that any of the fans in those stands expected to see. The Bengals really haunted the Ravens last year. And this was the kind of game you went into thinking, okay, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd are going to do Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd things. And don't forget, know this?
The untackleable man.
Oh, yes, of course. How could I forget the untackleable man himself, one Joe Mixon, who, yes, the Ravens have still not figured out how to tackle ever since the Bengals drafted him, and I believe it was 2018. I could be wrong about that. Just, you know, 35-30, you know, 38-35, you know, pick your variation of some score where it's going to take mid to high 30s in order to win the game. And that's not at all what we saw. We saw the Ravens predictably get out to a 10-0 lead before, again, predictably giving up that 10-0 lead before perhaps predictably, perhaps unpredictably, seeing Lamar Jackson march them down the field in the closing minute before setting up Justin Tucker to quite predictably kick the game-winning field goal to ice the game. And in some ways, it's encouraging, you know, for the Ravens, I think, that they're able to win a game without their fastball like that. I mean, you know, we had seen their pass offense really thrive earlier on in the year. It's kind of taken a bit of a step back these past 2 weeks, but at the same time, you know, they have faced the staunch Bills defensive front and then the division rival Bengals in back-to-back in a back-to-back game. So perhaps that was to be a bit expected.
We didn't have Rashad Bateman this game, which is huge.
Yeah, yeah. Plus their number one receiver, arguably, and Rashad Bateman was not out there, and that effectively should have made it much easier for the Bengals to double Mark Andrews, but nah. 8 catches, 89 yards, and a touchdown. And they were like, they were meaningful catches. I mean, you know, they were catches on third down that went for like a lot more than they needed to go for in order to convert the first down. And like for all the talk of, you know, the Ravens defense just collapsing late in games, you know, Sunday night belonged to them. And they showed that they too can carry this offense, you know, when the offense is struggling, as opposed to the offense, which it felt like at times had to carry the defense this year while the defense was struggling. So all in all, you know, pretty complete total team victory. It's clear that both of these coaching staffs are starting to get to know the other pretty well. Obviously, you know, Zach Taylor's regime began in 2020 now, I suppose. 2019, was it perhaps? 2019 or 2020, Zach Taylor came in. And, you know, it's clear that he and his staff have now, you know, been in the seat long enough to really, you know, start to understand this Ravens offense, and they can better, you know, better game plan for it and keep Lamar mostly bottled up, except for on that final drive, of course. But, you know, great players tend to save their best for the end when it matters most. And both Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson did that. Fortunately for Lamar Jackson, he got to have the ball last.
Yeah. Not too much else to say there. And for our last game of week 5, Raiders at Chiefs. Another AFC West matchup that was actually a fun one.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, what did you think of the I can't say it was a back and forth game, but it felt like it was
a one back and a one fourth.
Right. It felt like the momentum swung back and forth.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's just I don't have too much at stake for either of these games, either of these teams, rather. But the Raiders have to be one of the best 1-4 teams in recent memory.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're in all of these games. And not only are they in them, but, like, they're making impressive plays late in all of these games. I mean, I'm sorry, but I don't buy into this narrative that Josh McDaniels can't coach. I mean, I do think he can coach. But I think when you're a younger coach, late game situations are not always your forte. And I just think it's a reality that we have to accept for first and second year head coaches. They're not good late in games. Because in order to be good late in games, you have to have situational awareness. And a lot of situational awareness, in my opinion, is a function of experience. It's why Andy Reid wins close games. It's why John Harbaugh wins close games. It's why over the years Mike Tomlin and Bill Belichick have won close games. Because they've just been doing it for such a long time. Pete Carroll, they've been doing it for so long. They've seen so much that they're just better in the closing minutes, in the closing seconds. And I'm sorry, but going into Arrowhead and very nearly beating Andy Reid and Mahomes in prime time is not a recipe for this guy needs to be fired because the team is 1-4. Last year, they won all the close games. This year, they're losing all the close games. It's just one of those things. The team is not where it needs to be, you know, roster-wise. They have a lot of promising pieces, the Raiders do. Josh Jacobs is having an unbelievable year. Derek Carr is having an unbelievable year, thanks in large part to Devontae Adams. He's helping him out a lot. But it's just not it's just not enough, specifically on defense. It's just not enough for them to separate from other good teams. And I just think they're going to be a fun watch all year. I don't think they're going to go away. Well, they might go away from the playoff race, but you know, I don't think they're going to fall off the map in terms of prowess, in terms of like what our eyeballs enjoy watching.
Yeah, that's fair. It's definitely been a fun offensive team for the past few games. I think clearly the key was unlocking the run game with Josh Jacobs so that now they're actually a threatening offense on both sides, run in the pass. So now they can have their way with defenses. It's interesting because there's just so many good offenses in the NFL that you need defense in order to make a difference. And the Raiders simply do not have that right now outside of like two pass rushers in Max Crosby for sure and maybe Chandler Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but that was it for week 5. It was an interesting week for sure. And we definitely are looking forward to see what the rest of the NFL season has to do for us. Any final thoughts, Rob?
Broncos, Russ, Hackett, figure it out, man. Figure it out.
Let's ride.
Yes. Do ride, but do other things besides riding. Maybe like, you know, spend some time in the meeting room. Go back to the whiteboard. Perhaps if you're Russell Wilson, practice that deep ball. Practice trying to like, you know, throw it into the trash can at your estate or something. Just you know, figure something out because I mean they're lucky. They're lucky to be where they are. And again, they lost. They lost, you know, to the Colts, and they're lucky. You know, they're lucky they have any wins so far this year. I mean, they've really got to figure it out because they're not trending in the right direction.
Yeah, and my final thought is, the Bears almost won a football game. All right. That's really it. Da Bears. Bear down.
Bear down.
Peace out, everyone.
All right. See you guys.